Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, Vatican Radio. I'd like to mark a special anniversary relating to a pope of the 20th century. He's John the 23rd, born Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli, who died exactly 50 years ago on the 3rd of June 1963, 2 months after the completion of his well-known encyclical Pacem in Terris, or Peace on Earth. Pope John, now blessed, was elected to the See of Peter on the 28th of October 1958, and at the age of 77, was considered by many to be a sort of caretaker pope. But as it happens, he was a pope full of surprises. And during his 4.5 years as Roman pontiff, he launched the Catholic Church into one of its most momentous epochs. Leading up to this anniversary, I'll be bringing you archive interviews with some of those to witness that special era, focusing clearly on this council. But in today's programme, I'll be bringing you a taste of the lighter and more human side to this pope, as recounted to me by some of those who personally knew him. So why don't you get ready to listen to my guest's stories and to the dulcet tones of Pope John's voice once again.
John the 23rd is best remembered as good Pope John, the ordinary man who astonished the world. But while he has gone down in history books as the Pope who launched the Catholic Church into one of its most momentous epochs by calling the Second Vatican Council, it is the very human side to his personality that captured people's hearts and imaginations. People like those you'll be hearing on this programme, all of whom knew Pope John personally.
I remember when he was carried in the sedia gestatoria, and as a kind of joke he'd put his fingers in his ears like that and smile when they were making too much noise, I remember. And he thought they made too much noise.
Quest'aula massima del mondo cristiano è tutta pervasa del richiamo apostolico. Siamo tutti qui partecipi di questo vasto movimento della cristianità.
Because he had a very vibrant voice, although he was an old man. He spoke very fast. Perhaps because he was in a hurry. They said he was a man in a hurry, he had a lot to do. And also he used his hands a lot, more than most Italians. He didn't control his hands. He waved, he used them all the time, and he was smiling, and he communicated in every possible way with every part of himself, you know.
Ci sia lecito umilmente richiamare che in questo giorno esattamente l'umile successore di San Pietro, 40 anni or sono, chiamato dal Santo Padre Benedetto.
So he was walking up the stairs towards the main altar in St. Peter's Basilica, and as he went, he stumbled and fell. And I could hear the big sigh through the crowd. Most of them knew him from home. a fear, I guess. But he somehow scrambled up to his feet. I guess some Monsignor helped him up, but he got up on the top step and, you know, put his hands up in the sign of victory that he's still all right. And, you know, of course, the people all applauded, as you could expect, but he, with a big smile, then gave his talk.
Winston Churchill's first cousin, Sir John Leslie, was most struck by the Pope's sense of humour.
A great sense of humour. Monsignor Hebbick, when he went around to the canons of St. Peter's, Monsignor Hebbick said, "Your Holiness, I'm just a poor American." He said, "Are there any?" She said, "No."
Chi verrà dopo di me più tardi, sempre, posso dire, sempre, questa chiesa d'America è stata provveduta dal Signore di begli ingegni, di anime elette.
Rusminian father John Charles Leroux, who as the son of a former French ambassador to the Holy See grew up in Vatican circles, had a similar tale to tell.
It seemed that when he was elected Pope, the protocol is what title are you going to give to your brothers or to your family? And his reply was, have you looked at them? And of course, they were not suitable to bear any title. They had remained very simple peasants. And another person, rather impertinent, had asked him, are you related to the Marquesses Roncalli? There is a family of Marquesses Roncalli. And his reply was, I am, my brothers are not.
Questo è, non è stampato, non è scritto.
Well, that amused me.
He said this last part is not printed.
Some of the bishops from Ohio, and I found myself being the interpreter. And Pope John had a marvelous way with him, you see, making fun of himself in a way. Apologized, you see, that he for not being able to speak to them in English. These just little flashes of humor, flashes of. That established a relationship, a mood.
The founder of Boys Town, the late Monsignor Carol Abbing.
And he said he was delighted to meet the bishop from Ohio. So I, being knowing everything, you see, behind, said, Ohio. And so he went on, you see, and then he says, so next time, he said, we have dear friends coming to see him from Ohio. I said, Ohio. So he half turned to me and said, oh, here, Ohio. And I said, this is now when you keep quiet. You see, this is beautiful, beautiful spontaneity. And that was very much him.
And now a word of greeting to our beloved English-speaking children in the Diocese of...
Well, he was known here as, among the Americans and among the... indeed among the Italians, Johnny Walker, because he loved walking and talking and meeting people and gesticulating and communicating and joking to each other.
Former Prior General of the Augustinians, Father Martin Nolan.
We heard that he wandered off without announcing to anybody that he was descending for a walk in the Vatican garden, and whenever he went down there he found nobody working, so that eventually he began to phone around, what's happening, is nobody working in the Vatican, and they explained to him that Pius XII had wished that all the gardeners and others disappear when he took his daily walk. But John XXIII, I heard, said, oh, no, sure, what's the point of taking a walk if you can't talk to somebody? So leave them there so that we can chat about this and that. And so in this way, the regime changed.
I remember one time, one of the universities, the first time the Pope went there, in our memory anyway, Pope Pius XII did not do that. And he gave us a little peroration on how we should study hard to be good priests and to be good religious.
The late Carmelite Father Redemptorist Balabek.
The end of it, and he was trying to tell us how we have to be faithful to this church of ours that all of us love so much. And he was getting on, then he was getting toward the end of his talk, so he said, don't forget this church of ours that we have to love so much, this one holy Catholic, and he couldn't think of the next word. And I could see all the Monsignor around him were embarrassed as anything. And he kept stuttering, and he couldn't get it. He said, well, let's say Roman. He forgot apostolic. Anyway, that was Pope John. You know, it made all of us feel good, especially we who were up for exams. You know, if the Pope couldn't remember apostolic, gave us a lot of hope. And that's why we were big fans of Pope John the 23rd.
When he was appointed nuncio in Paris, I was in the Foreign Office by then. I'd been called back to the Foreign Office. And I remember one day, I found the car in front of the main door and suitcases everywhere, and the nuncio coming down the stairs. So he told me, oh, yes, you know, I've received a telegram from Rome asking me to come urgently to Rome. An obedient son of the church, as you see, I'm starting on the moment. But I'm not taking the aeroplane. In fact, one took very seldom the aeroplane still in those years. Nor the night train. I'm taking my car. And as the nuncio must stop at every great cathedral that he sees and inspects what's happening there and so on, speaks to the bishop, I'll be in Rome in about 10 years' time. By that time, the problem would have been solved by somebody else.
Che da noi, ma insomma, si tratta sempre di un'energia vera a tutore della Chiesa Cattolica sulla quale si può contare.
I did go back to the Vatican while he was reigning during his pontificate. And he had developed, for instance, the court size. He had also taken up, in his own dressing, things that had disappeared. He dressed sometimes with that bonnet that you see on the portraits of Julius II by Raphael, and that had disappeared. He used the room of the Tronetto, which is the little throne room next to the office of the Pope, which Pius XII very rarely... In fact, I never saw Pius XII use that room, but he used it again. He sat on the throne, and once for the private audiences of officials, not in his desk, he was on the throne, and there were two armchairs at the foot of the throne. And that's why, when he received the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, there was a display of the court that amazed all the English people. The Duke and the Queen came back absolutely thrilled by the display of that Renaissance court in its full splendour.
That same year, the late Lord Altrincham came out to Rome to report on the Queen's official visit to the Vatican, and also attended an audience with Pope John XXIII. I've asked my colleague, Philippa Hitchin, to read some extracts from this article for us.
Pope John XXIII makes even a general audience in St. Peter's seem like an intimate family occasion, a party thrown by a benign old man for the innumerable children who look for comfort, security, and guidance. Pope John has the demeanour of a good country priest, with bubbling zest and bonhomie, but no airs or graces. Born in the Sadia between thousands of applauding votaries, he responds to their enthusiasm in kind. They love him. He obviously loves them. Thousands of applauding votaries, he responds to their enthusiasm in kind. They love him. He obviously loves them. They believe in the magic of the church. He believes in it too, and does not suggest by his manner that he is any nearer to the heavenly mysteries than they are. He settles back comfortably in his chair and talks to the vast crowd around him for all the world as if he were talking to one old friend by his fireside. This spontaneity warms the heart, as studied and exotic rhetoric never can. Two microphones curve towards his face like two serpents poised to strike. He ignores their existence. His hand, one gripping his pince-nez, knocks them repeatedly as points are emphasized or illustrated. Cheerfulness and homely wisdom are the keynotes. The cold splendor of St. Peter's is momentarily forgotten. A domestic atmosphere prevails. When the Pope mentions saints who are buried in the Basilica, he might be introducing us to members of the family lurking in the background and needing to be brought forward. When he refers to death, he might be speaking of an acquaintance whom he neither fears nor particularly dislikes. Roman Catholic dogma is as foreign to me as any other sort, and more foreign to me than some. But I must pay homage to a Christian leader who is evidently Christian. The theories about Christ which he accepts and promotes will never be mine, but a lovable character is more potent than any tract, and Pope John is a lovable character.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this little feature I put together for you, focusing on Blessed John the 23rd in the lead up to the 50th anniversary of his death. I'll be bringing you more from that era in the weeks to come, and focusing, of course, on the Second Vatican Council. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.